20th century mystic and rabbi, Abraham Heschel, once said that what the Bible demands can be encompassed in one word: remember. And so, like our Jewish forebears, who are commanded by God to remember their liberation from slavery in Egypt by the annual observance of the sacred ritual meal of the Passover, tonight we remember the meal and the action that Jesus shared with his closest friends on the night before he died for us, what he did and what he taught them. To remember usually means to think back nostalgically, a kind of reminder of a person or event. The church often uses another word, a $50 word, anamnesis, which means kind of a total recall. That's the word used in the letter we read just a minute ago, Paul's letter to the Corinthians for recalling Jesus' words at the Last Supper. Do this in remembrance, in anamnesis of me. There is no word like it in English. It's a dynamic word that means making the past living and present again, here and now, every single time we do it. And so in the language of anamnesis, we remember, and Christ is present once again. We sit at table with Jesus in the upper room as his disciples and share a meal with him. We allow Jesus, through the power of the Holy Spirit, to pull together into this one place the far and the near, the rich and the poor, the whole and the sick, those in Zoom land and those present, the weak and the strong, the young and the old, the lost and the lonely, the living and the dead. All these broken fragments of our humanity, so that he may reunite them again in his love for us, to remember them, a love which is beyond anything that we can imagine. And we remember another action of Jesus on that night. We call today by its name. The title of this day, Maundy Thursday, comes from the Latin mandatum, from which we get mandate. And the mandate we get from Jesus is to love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. He lives this out through humility by washing his disciples' feet. And this is the only one of the four Gospels that records this act. Jesus' whole person, his entire ministry, his ministry was his message, his words and acts of love and challenge and truth-telling and world imagining. His words and actions were of a piece. He walked his own talk. He was fully integrated. The story of love and humility and service that he lived was acted out in the washing of his followers' feet and all else that ensued that evening. It was one of those most poignant moments of his life. Our text tonight begins with an observation from the Gospel writer John. He frames this whole event as part of Jesus' long-suffering love for persons. John tells us that Jesus knew that his hour had come, and having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Through it all, against all odds. This "to the end" phrase is very dramatic, and I don't want to ignore it, because we're meant to hear the whole story from beginning to end and it's about the persistence of Jesus' love. Recall, it's John who tells us that God loved the whole world. It's John who writes that Jesus wants to draw the whole world to himself. It's John who records Jesus saying that he doesn't judge the world, but has come to save it. It's John who tells us Jesus is the vine and we are part of him. Jesus is showing his disciples, all of them, including the denier Peter and the betrayer Judas, what it is to love them to the end, to love fully, totally, unequivocally. John is trying hard to reflect this. And at the same time, this same John, puts verses of condemnation and judgment in Jesus' mouth in his gospel. What I hear and read is John's own conflicted picture of Jesus. John has Jesus rejecting the people he rejects, such as Judas, the Jewish religious authorities that Jesus struggled against, the people his own fledgling community separated from at the end of the first century. This year I've read John in a new light, as one just like the rest of us, who's trying to follow Jesus' word and teaching and still holds on to his or her own biases. Richard Rohr reminds us that, you know, when we're down, when we're feeling sorry for ourselves, we respond by blaming others. John does it too. While John doesn't tell us much about the meal Jesus had with his friends, the other gospel writers tell us this is when he instituted the Eucharist. The Eucharist is always tied to a ministry of service. After dinner, Jesus gets up to show believers in every age a further dimension of that service. He begins to wash their feet, and Peter protests. Peter has been known to put his foot in his mouth before. So Jesus tells him to sit down and pay attention, that he doesn't know yet what Jesus is doing. Peter's like that disciple, that annoying kid in your class at school who is the first to raise his hand and he wants his opinion and his questions and his troubles to set the tone. All the disciples are watching, including Judas. Peter questions what Jesus is doing, insisting that they should be washing his feet. And Jesus' response says it all. One who has bathed does not need to wash, but is entirely clean. And you are clean, though not all of you. And then John gets his dig in, for he knew who was to betray him. I wonder what the other disciples were thinking as they sat around the table. What Judas was thinking. I'm guessing they were speculating, each, who among them was the one, or even if they were it. Who would want to hurt Jesus, their teacher and their friend? Why would anyone want to betray him? For a fleeting second, I wonder about myself, and then I quickly remember how often I've betrayed Jesus. I fall silent. And Jesus washes the feet of every single one of them, no exceptions. John doesn't note that he skipped Peter or Judas because one would deny or the other betray. He washed the feet of each one, and then tells them they should do the same. Love in the same way. Serve others selflessly and generously in the same manner. Because we are all loved by a boundless love. In the this morning's word from the Society of St. John the Evangelist, Brother David Dreyhoff puts it this way. The love to which Jesus points us is more than polite behavior or kind acts or nice words. It does not rely on positive feelings or warm thoughts, nor does it depend on personal attraction. The love to which Jesus points us requires an openness, a receptivity, a posture of self-giving towards the other. The kind of openness with which we choose to receive into our hands the feet of another person, regardless of whose feet they are or where they have been. It implies a willingness to hold those feet tenderly, regardless of what they look like or what they have done. It requires us to forgive the feet that have kicked us and to ask forgiveness of the feet we have stepped on. It is remembering that the feet we hold belong to one who was created and is loved by the same God who created and loved us. It is recognizing how much those feet look like our own. This is the new commandment. It's not all that new. It's what Jesus has been telling us and living out himself all along. It's a reminder, renewed again tonight, that Jesus wants to love us into wholeness, and everyone else in the world as well. Everyone. George Floyd and Derek Chauvin, Breonna Taylor and the Louisiana police officers, Democrats, Republicans, your pain in the neck brother-in-law, and the neighbor you haven't spoken to in years. Everywhere. And Jesus asks us to join him in doing so. Love one another as I have loved.